Warning, the following podcast contains spoilers and swears.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Hi.
What's your name?
Evelyn Rogers. What's your name?
Scott Rogers.
What's this podcast?
Forget, it's been so long.
Sorry about that. This is a podcast about the magicians and magicians related things.
Called Fillory and Father.
Yeah, Fillory and Father. That's us, baby. I'm the father, you're the Fillory.
We're something.
We're something, all right. But yes, this is Fillory and Father, the podcast about the magicians and magicians related things.
And we're back, baby.
We're back, baby. Sorry, guys. I was out of town.
And I was not watching the magicians.
That's, you know, we're back at it, baby.
Right. Now we're here with the side effect.
Mm-hmm. Season 4, episode 7.
Directed by Sally Richardson Whitfield.
Dang, that's a cool name.
That's a long name.
But yeah, today we're going to be talking about the side effect. And we get to see the very first scene. We see my special boy, Penny Adiote. But he's no longer my special boy, because he's the underworld Penny, so we don't like him anymore.
What do you have against dead people?
So much.
Why? Why do you hate them so much?
I just don't like
this
Penny.
They're dead.
I just don't like this
Penny.
They're
dead. They can't help themselves.
Because he's just a pod person now. He's not the same guy.
That's because he's not running around with his shirt off.
Yeah. Once they put him in a suit, his whole personality sapped away.
Was that the writing, or was that
free the nipple
acting?
Free the nipple.
All right, enough.
Well, I mean, it's Arjun Gupta doing a very good job at showing that Penny has lost all personality now that he's gotten his soul sucked dry by working in the underworld, and I applaud him for it.
But that doesn't happen to the other people in the underworld in the library.
But he acts it that way, and
I don't know. Was that really was that his choice, or do you think that was?
I think it was his choice.
I
applaud him on that distinction, but also it makes me sad because it's a bad choice.
Yeah, it's a bad choice because he should still be Penny. He should still be interesting. He should still be rebellious.
He's not anymore.
Well, but
they've neutered him in the story, and that's why.
Well, they didn't explain why. Why is he so neutered?
Because he ate that cursed cupcake at the book book club, and his whole personality got sapped away.
With the cupcake?
You know you're never supposed to eat anything in the underworld.
That's true.
He ate that cupcake or muffin, and it sapped his whole personality away.
Mm.
And he gave up on life, and now he's just a husk of himself. A nippleless shell.
Does anyone ever eat anything else in the underworld in the show?
No, it's literally just that.
That's it.
It's that
so
one.
How do you know that that's what did it?
Because it's common lore that if you eat something in the underworld, you are like forced to stay there. That's
right,
like,
but that doesn't mean you lose your personality.
Yeah,
I know, Persephone.
You know.
But what's that doesn't mean?
Well, I mean, there are other things in the
underworld.
You're
just forced
where
to stay there.
Well,
you're not,
but in,
like,
you know,
don't lose your personality.
In different types of lore, different types of myths and stuff, there's, you know, stories about how people will, like, fade away. Or, you know, how the last living memory, once that's gone, you fade away into, like, a second death. And so it's kind of like that. That's what I choose to believe.
You think he's in a second death because he's wearing a suit?
I think he has his second death because he's been replaced by a Penny from an alternate timeline.
Hmm.
And because of that, everyone's like, well, we've got one Penny. We don't need the other one anymore.
It's too hard to juggle pennies.
Yeah. It's very hard.
All right.
Yeah. But we see Penny, and he...
You know what happens, though, when you put two pennies together.
What do you get when you put two pennies together?
2 cents.
2 cents. But the episode opens with Penny reading the Quester's storyline, and we see a white guy. He's the...
What's his name?
I don't know. I never caught it. He's just miscellaneous white man.
He brings it up a lot.
Yeah.
You think it's just the writers trying to make a point of some
Absolutely
sort?
Absolutely it is, because they're going, oh, Quentin's just this cis white guy, so why do we have to care about him? It may seem like he's the main character, but he's not, actually, even though he's the main character of the book series this show is based off of.
But remember, didn't we establish that in the book that he's... not quite the main character.
Yeah, he makes that decision and he makes that realization.
So
not
do you think
decision.
That the writers?
But he still
took
is
that literally.
He still is the protagonist. He's not the main character, but he's still the protagonist of the whole trilogy.
No, no, the protagonist means you're the main character. You move the story forward.
Yeah, Quentin moves the story
then
forward.
Then he's the protagonist.
Yeah, I said that.
But he's not the like the main hero.
Yeah, he's not. The whole point of the story is that Quentin is not a hero.
Right.
The whole time in The Magician King, it's literally. The whole at the end of the story, you know, Quentin talks to Ember and he says, you know, like, is this my time to like become a hero? And then at the end of The Magician King, he's like, no, I'm the hero. I get to get the treasure and I get to stay. And he goes, no, you know what heroes do is they lose. And then Quentin loses everything. And
name a hero that
the
loses,
whole point
though.
Is the whole point is that he keeps unlearning these kind of like fantasy archetypes as he goes through his life until he becomes like grounded in reality, in this magical reality.
Other than King Arthur, who loses?
I can't conjure
Does
up.
Does Frodo lose?
Frodo loses. There is no way for the ring to be destroyed without a failure of men. And Frodo Frodo at the penultimate moment takes the ring for himself. There was no way to cast the ring into Mount Doom without it being an accident. No person could ever willingly destroy the One Ring.
Right.
And
but it happened.
Yeah, it happened because of an accident.
Happily ever after.
He did not live happily ever after.
What
he
happens?
Lived with crippling PTSD for the rest of his days
well, yeah,
that
he
was
almost,
in the Shire.
He almost got
eaten
by a spider.
He went to the Grey Havens. Then he went there and he recovered.
And he had a happy ending.
Mostly happy ending.
What about Samwise? Did he have a happy ending?
He did. He did. He had lots of kids and then he sailed off to go live with his boyfriend.
What about Gandalf? Did he have a happy ending?
Yeah, he sailed off to go live with his girlfriend.
So you're proving my point.
Uh-huh.
That heroes have happy endings.
Yeah, but I'm saying that a hero, one of the like things is that a hero can fail and
sure, but they eventually win.
I wouldn't say that Quentin truly wins at the end of The Magician's Land. I mean, he does these
sure he
cool
does.
Things.
He becomes
he wins,
evolved.
He wins,
now is
yeah,
on
he wins
a,
in the sense of his like he wins in the sense of personal growth, but not in like material success. He doesn't
But he created his own world.
He
doesn't need need material success anymore.
Uh-huh.
He's beyond that.
Uh-huh.
He's like the Watcher in Marvel,
uh-huh.
Right? He's just now he's an evolved being, and he doesn't need things like wealth or that. He just now he's on. I mean, I think the ending of The Magician King is that
Magician's
Land is that he's back on equal footing with Alice.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, then they can maybe start their relationship from a new plateau.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not all about his relationship with Alice. It's about his relationship with himself.
Well, yeah, and magic.
And that's, like, the more important
Sure, but Alice is, like, a manifestation of that.
I think Alice in the third book serves as the parallel to Quentin in the path that he could have taken, in which it's
could
the
have
more
gone bad.
Yeah, it's Alice is the self the extreme self destruction, and Quentin is the self healing
well,
process.
Maybe...
And they both go through that, you know, 7 years, and Quentin goes through 7 years of learning and failing and healing and learning and failing and learning, and Alice stays stagnant, and she rewatches her traumatic memories over and over again, and she tortures people and she murders people, and she stays in this self-destructive spiral of the past the whole time until she's brought to the present by Quentin. And so they are those parallels that eventually come back to equal footing, yes. But I think the most important thing of the Magician's trilogy overall is the arc of Quentin's personal growth, not necessarily his interpersonal relationships. Though they are very important to him and his growth, they are not the most central thing. It is himself and his own internal learning process.
I think those are very good observations, but you know what the problem is?
This isn't the book, it's the show.
No, it's there's no Quentin in this
there's
episode.
There's no Quentin
at all.
In this episode
not
at all.
All. No,
and
no,
they're like,
Quentin,
he's
no.
Just a white guy, so you don't have to care about him.
As a white guy... I'm a little offended by that,
uh-huh.
To be honest.
I'm patting you. Here you go.
Yeah, you can pat me. And now I'm not saying every story has to be about a white guy. And I'm not saying that white guys don't have more than adequate representation in fiction.
They do.
But we can have stories about non-white men without having to tear down anybody in order to do it. Why don't they just have it? Why don't they just say, you know what? We're going to be looking at some other characters. We don't even have to say...
Because they want to prove a point.
Well, their point is... First of all, they made their point when? When, what year was this made?
This was in 2019.
Right. So, you know what? It's already old. That making that joke, or whatever it is, it's not really a joke, but trying to, like, show that they're woke or whatever, is like, yawn. That's like, get past that, right? As you know... Tell stories about other ethnicities and genders and you know, whatever, but you don't have to tear something down in order to do it. Just do it. Just tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to tell a story about that character, that's it. Just do it. You don't have to say, this story I'm telling is better and these other stories are worse because they're not the story I'm telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a
high horse situation.
It's a very high horse, and the minute the writers kind of show their hand, the show is worse for it.
Well, the message gets convoluted because they're like, look how cool we are for highlighting all of these kind of, you know, background characters,
right?
And then it's just kind of.
Penny tries to make the point, you know, hey, there's other characters out there, and they're worth following, and they have important things to say. Just say that then.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to go through this whole, you know, it's, look, it's annoying.
Uh-huh.
And that's why people get annoyed about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And it's annoying from both directions. It's annoying from the trying to be socially responsible perspective. And it's annoying from the, if I were a type of person that would be angered by that, it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't help anybody. It never helps anybody to tear somebody else down. You should always be supportive and just do it. Don't waste time trying to prove that you're better for doing it. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do have to point out that there are every single side character that they do highlight are white women.
Well, yeah.
So,
hey, I mean, you know, to their credit, they're moving forward 1 inch.
Yeah, an inch.
Now, the irony is
they have
people of color on the show as supporting characters
in this story.
All right, so here, this is
and
a good...
And they're the main characters, so it's like...
Well, all right, here's a great question then. All right, if we were to... really embrace the message of this episode that they're trying to do,
mm-hmm.
which admittedly is a good message, right? Mm-hmm. That everybody is important. I mean, this really is not much different than, you've watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
yes,
right?
Yes, I have.
Do you remember the episode, The Zeppo?
I do not.
The famous episode where the story is all from Xander's
point of view. Oh, yeah, I remember.
Right? And then there's a whole episode of Justice League Unlimited where it's all from Booster Gold's point of view, right?
Booster Gold's a great character.
Yeah, he is a great character. But the point is they're both white males, right?
Uh-huh.
So let's do this. Let's do a little alternate casting, and let's pick three characters
to highlight on in the Magicians.
To highlight on the Magicians that are not just one step away from the thing they're saying that they're so superior for not telling the story about.
I think it would be interesting if they were to focus on side characters who were not of the main cast,
mm-hmm.
like maybe like Prince S or something, because mm-hmm. we don't ever really check in with Loria after season two.
Well, right. Well, let's do this then. Let's put it in context of the episode, because mm-hmm. there's three things that have to be accomplished in this episode. One is the mystery of the non-talking animals.
Yes.
Two is the What is the second one?
Harriet stuff.
Harriet stuff, right? And then three is the...
The magic... The Deweys.
The cursed Deweys, right. So, number one is easy.
Yeah.
Number one is, you know who it should be.
Rafe,
it should totally be Rafe, right?
Sergio.
Right, Sergio, right? Give Sergio his own episode. Let him go.
Please.
He's the one with the most emotional connection
to
the talking animals. And let him go, look, these other the you know, I love the queen, and I love, you know, all the people. I love the High King, but they're not. They're too busy. They're preoccupied.
Rafe and
well, no,
Dick
he
Pickwick
yeah,
team up.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Oh, right? Have them team up, uh-huh, and they're trying to solve the mystery of the non-talking animals, and let, uh-huh, them solve it. Let them have a hero moment, right?
Yeah.
All right. So who would we pick for the hedge witch story? Who are some hedge witches that we might have met before that would be interesting to, or even like today's episode. What about the
Whitney
woman
and the
friend? Yeah, the man.
Yeah.
Right. Have
don't
them.
Get a name for him.
I know we don't get a name, but they're slightly interesting characters.
Yeah,
right?
Like, wouldn't it be cool to see them? Like, we see Katie just appear doing the black market stuff, and then it's them solving
right. The
mystery because they work there and they see it happening to other people.
Right. They see Katie kind of floundering, and maybe they do things to help enable Katie, even like without her knowing it, maybe,
uh-huh,
right? Like maybe they end up because of their contacts or even through hedge magic, right?
Yeah.
Like show that hedge magic is actually cool,
uh-huh,
like in the earlier days of the episode of the show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that leaves our third plot.
Is the library plot line.
Which is the library, which
Santa
is a tough
Claus.
One. Oh, yeah, there you
Done.
Go.
Done. Easy. He's on the lam.
Yeah.
He can encounter, and mirrors are everywhere.
Okay.
You know, that could be a mystery. He's a nice person, and maybe
what if,
he feels compelled to.
No, even better.
What?
What if it's Christmas Eve, and he has to come back and give gifts? Because regardless of the fact that the library imprisoned him, he's still Santa Claus.
Yes.
And he still would have to, at the very least, go to the library to leave lumps of coal. Right? If not, uh-huh, to, like, deliver gifts to actual good people.
There you go, magician.
Maybe writers. Maybe it's like Santa has to come back and find the one good person at the library.
And there's
and
no
then,
there's
no, and no you know one. Who it is?
Who is it?
It's Harriet, stuck behind the mirror.
Exactly.
Right?
Perfect. And so he goes to try and find out what's up.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom. Magician's writers, we got your number.
Yep, exactly. And that number is zero. All right, so let's talk about this mess they served up.
Let's talk about this episode. But basically, their Penny's subordinate is this white guy who doesn't really understand the importance of the people who are you know, main characters in the show. You know, Penny is asking him, like, where would he shelve certain people's books, and how he measures this one woman's life just on its own, and it seems unremarkable, but then she saves another person. She saves her brother's life, and so he's like, well, actually, you shouldn't judge a person just by this one thing in their life.
I don't think anybody in the world qualifies as unremarkable.
Yeah.
Right? I think everybody is unique in their own way, and that, you know, there's something. I think everybody has at least one thing that's remarkable about them.
Yeah, but Penny's like, you know, you've been seeing these stories, and you know, because you've seen this before and because you see yourself in it, you feel like you know what's gonna happen, but that's not necessarily the case.
See, now that's interesting, because this episode also then postulates that this whole episode is like a what if.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's
but
reading
but
the...
But it's not a what if, because it's stuff that's actually happening.
Well, but don't they say that...
They're reading it as it's happening.
Right. Okay. So it's...
They're just in the underworld.
They're getting new
and
pages.
And so, like, the timeline's, like, they're, like, ahead of everyone and or behind, because time is different in the underworld.
Right.
So that, you know, because at the end of the episode...
And the dusty Cheerios.
Yeah. The dusty,
they're looking
Cheerios.
Particularly ugly.
Dusty.
Yeah, right? They don't... They look different than they normally do.
Someone ate some of them.
No, it just, they look like they've been under the carpet or under the under the couch or something.
Uh-huh. But we see Zelda, and we see for the very, well, she's talking to the board about how, you know, they have to get Alice. Santa Claus escaped, but she doesn't want to, like, kill anyone, because that would be terrible. And we see for the first time Everett, who is the villain they introduced halfway through the season.
Now, how come Everett...
And he's the most boring milquetoast dude you ever did see.
How about... Why is... Okay, so Everett, and who's the woman with the dark hair?
Oh, she doesn't matter.
That
she's
saw
just
Santa.
A subordinate.
Right, but how come, like, every evil bureaucrat in every quasi-sci-fi
is
movie...
some guy with glasses?
No. Why do they always just look the same? They dress the same, their hair is the same, and, it, like, even the environment that they're in is kind of that, like, just like in Loki, right? Like the the whatever it's called, not the Tennessee Valley Authority, but the time,
the TVA.
Yeah, time variance authority or whatever. Like they always, or Brazil, or
the most archetype. Evil, the most evil thing in the world is late stage capitalism, and that means office building.
Right, but like it's cubicles. A library. Wouldn't you think that the head librarians would be like guys wearing tweed patches on their coats and having
they all have like 40s code.
Yeah, I know. But it's code. To be honest, I mean, I love the 40s and I love the aesthetic. But as an archetype of like, all right, this is the bad industrial complex, it's played out. That shit was old all the way back when Gattaca came out.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's like, I don't know. This is another problem of the show, this late stage show, is it's like, it's just, it doesn't feel like there's much creativity going on. Not just the writing, but like the direction is kind of boring.
No, actually, I was enjoying the hell out of the Dutch Angles this fucking episode. Every time they're in the Netherlands and in the library.
But they do that all the time.
I know, but
they
I don't
did that
know.
All the way back at
I
the
know,
beginning.
I know, but just for some reason, this episode, I was really enjoying the angles.
Well, that's because there was nothing else to enjoy.
That's true. But basically, they say that they have to find a solution to, you know, not only their Alice problem, but also their Hedge Witch problem, because, you know, they're worried that stuff is going to happen. And so they decide that they are going to try and track down people who are, you know, breaking the library rules, and going to track down Alice because they feel like she's going to go underground with where the hedges are. So that's why they come up
but
with
what's the
solution,
like what's
which
the
Zelda comes up with.
But what's the threat, right?
The threat is that Alice, you know, knows the library and knows their secrets and is part of these questing groups.
But has Alice, like, read every book in the library?
No.
So what's the threat?
It's
and they had her locked up for, like, a year.
And they had her under contract and she broke the contract. And she's, like, a dangerous person because she helped bring magic back. Because
she broke a contract?
You know,
no,
it's Alice.
It's lame. It should have been, like, she sped read every book in the library when she was a Niffin. And then they were like, we can't have, like, we're the library. We have the control over all the information. We shouldn't have, there shouldn't be somebody out there with all the information.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what it should be. It should be that they're trying to control
censor.
The information.
Which is what
which
they're
is
doing.
The, well, which is the irony, right? It's like, they're the library. Libraries are established to share information, but they're withholding magic.
That's
and
literally the plot line.
Right, I get it. But they're
thing.
Not, but, like, the thing that they're, you know, now this main plot point, which is like get Alice, it isn't underscored by their motivation. They've set up all this motivation to what these characters are about, and they're not capitalizing on it.
Well, it's bad writing. It's bad writing. Yeah.
That can't just be the answer for everything, can it?
It is mostly the answer.
There's got to be something
else. It's
either
bad writing or they want it to be edgy.
Maybe they're just all in the take.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they're being paid by and the Walking Dead to say, look, we'll pay you extra money if you just write badly.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's because we don't want you taking away from our share of audience.
Uh-huh.
Now you're just patronizing me.
Uh-huh. But Everett and Zelda, you know, talk after their little meeting. And Everett's like, I'm worried about you, Zelda. You haven't really grieved your daughter yet. And Zelda has basically a nervous breakdown where she hears a high-pitched ringing noise and some broken glass.
Mm. Glass. Could it mean anything?
Mm-hmm. And yes, then we see Penny and the white guy again. And Penny is telling the white guy, he's like, you gotta be able to see the bigger picture. You know, down here, because we're dead, we have access to this information. And we're able to see the grander story than care about, like, the minuscule kind of part.
Here's an interesting thing. Why do employees of the library have their stories open to like even the underworld, right? Like, why they're not dead? Well, they're not dead, so the underworld shouldn't have access, right?
No, I think it would make more sense if it was only the underworld that had access to the dead records, because then it's you have the full. Story
but those people
of the
aren't.
Person.
But those people aren't dead yet, so their story isn't. It would be like you getting the book early and it's not over yet, right?
Yeah, I think it would make more sense if the underground branch was the only one who had access to the books of people's lives, is what I'm saying.
Mm. But since they're always changing, that doesn't make sense either.
That's true, but in the end, everyone dies. But I still
think that the notion of having Zelda's story, life story, accessible as she's an important member of the library is a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
Like, if I were running the library, if I were the evil bureaucrat, I would make sure that every employee's book is in the poison room.
Well, that's what it is for all the library employees. They're in
the
poison
room. But then why are there copies in the underworld?
Because they're the underworld. They have access to everything.
No, it's because, again, they just want to write this plot and they need an excuse, right?
Yeah. But then we see Fen. She is talking with Margot. It's that scene we saw from last episode. Margot's trying to get her birthright lizard talk.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunny, an interdimensional bunny, appears, and she picks it up thinking she's got a message, but its throat is cut.
Yes, everybody loves a bleeding bunny.
And then she wakes up, and then we see her in that same situation from before, and it turns out that Fen had, like, precognitively dreamed and predicted right. that the animals were muted.
This is how we're going to make Fen interesting,
mm-hmm.
is make her psychic.
Make her psychic. And so then we see Katie, we see Katie before right before the events of 405, and we see that she's been doing her own thing. She's been following up on all the cases that her alter ego Sam had been investigating when she was a cop, and she and Julia kind of talk, and she's like, "Lay, listen, I don't want to be a background character in your story anymore, like, I'm letting you guys stay here in my house. You know, I'm one who's making reasonable decisions, and I need my own path, and I want my life to feel like it's about me, finally. You know?
Yay.
Yay, Katie.
Take charge, Katie.
Take charge." And she's like, "Listen, I will help you, but in my own way." And then we see the Baba Yaga. She's here to collect rent, because apparently that's how Marina kept the apartment. And she has a weird grocery list on her fridge. And the Baba Yaga asks for a Webster's Weeping Baby. It's like a plump pelican statue and then a bag of holding. And the Baba Yaga is possessing a young woman named Bailey. And Bailey channels her in order to collect rent and to get out of scary Ubers, which I liked. So then Katie...
Good acting by... Bailey actress.
Bailey actress. Shout out to her. She's great.
Although I think the voice was, done afterwards, right?
Yeah,
like it wasn't
obviously.
Her doing the voice.
No, it was definitely
No, but
her.
it would have been cool if, right, if she was like, her. "I'm Baba Yaga," and then she's like, "Hey, I'm Bailey."
Uh-huh.
You know, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But again, it's...
Katie has the first
the
of right, the
Hang
list.
On. But the writers, again, are resorting to...
Fetch quest.
Another freaking fetch quest. So I have a question, which is... If we removed
every fetch quest
from this show, how long would the actual season be? Like, the whole show be? Would it be two seasons long?
Six episodes.
Would it be six episodes long?
Six episodes.
No, I think it'd be a little longer.
Six whole
but
episodes.
I would love to see somebody, not me, I'm not doing that, because it's...
What are you going to write for your fan fiction, though?
I'm not...
What are you going to write for your fan fiction? The fans... The fans want the fan fiction, Dad. What are you gonna? Are you gonna write about Penny?
No.
Are you gonna write about Fen?
No.
Are you gonna write about Josh?
No.
Your favorite character. Are you gonna write about Todd, your number one boy in the whole wide world? Todd might make an appearance. Oh, is it a Todd story?
You know, I don't want to ruin.
You don't
want to
ruin it.
My fans.
You're just...
All three of them.
Well, you better start brainstorming.
Brenda,
my boy.
And
Ellen,
and Ellis,
and my.
My. Okay.
And Aaron, who isn't
five.
Really listening to the episode because she's been so busy. But
five.
You're a fan in spirit. We know this.
Okay.
Yes. So many people. All five of them.
All five.
Oh, and Chelsea too.
Six.
Shout out to Chelsea.
I count them on one and a half hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Katie finds the first object. Marina had already found it, so she just has to find this weeping baby and the bag of holding.
Of course.
And so she goes to find this enchanted item dealer named Lovelady, who is a character from the books.
Yeah, I don't remember.
He is the one who is who gives Penny the button.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, dude.
But he's like barely mentioned, right?
There's a whole chapter in the first book called Lovelady.
In the first what?
In the first book. There's a whole chapter called Lovelady.
In Magicians?
Yes, in the Magicians. Josh goes to Lovelady to buy, like, amulets and stuff because he feels like he's inadequate at Welters. And Lovelady is this old man who peddles, like, shitty enchantments at Breakbills. And no one knows if he's an actual magician or not, but he's been coming there so long that it just kind of let him do his thing. And then he actually finds something real for once, and it is the Fillory button, which Penny buys off of him for, like, $500,000.
Hmm.
And that's what happens. But Katie comes to a bar, and she's looking for Lovelady so she can find the objects. And she talks to the bartender, and she's like, "Hey, I need to talk to Lovelady." And he sets down a spell, and he's like, "You got to do the spell to, you know, be able to talk." And so he does. And he does this little spell, and he snaps, and he says, "Ishik," and a little flame lights up. And then Katie's like, "I can do better." And so she does a spell, and she makes like the whole bar light up. And that is a scene from the books. It is a scene that happens in The Magician King. Quentin and Julia go to a safe house, and Julia, you know, she's a bigwig around there, but Quentin doesn't necessarily know that yet, and so he can't even do the most simple of hedge spells because it's kind of complicated, and he's like, "Oh my god, fuck this. I'm a classically trained magician. I'm gonna do my magician shit." And so he does the huge spell in order to get into the safe house, and I was very happy when I first rewatched that to finally recognize that scene.
Is that, have they milked the well dry?
No, there's more references.
Okay.
But yeah, I love that little book scene.
It's been so long since we've actually had
a book reference.
Anything from the book, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like, you know, so deep into
fan fiction territory.
Yes, this is like after the sixth issue of Star Wars.
Yeah.
When it was published by Marvel, and they were like, "Oh shit. We've run out of movie. What do we do now?" And they're like, "All right, let's make an adventure where it's the Seven Samurai, but the Seven Samurai are Han Solo, Chewbacca, a Green Rabbit, a Porcupine Man, a Don Juan Quixote, a hooker, and a boy who is not Luke Skywalker and his robot fighting a giant Godzilla, and it is the giant Godzilla is also they're being threatened by a space pirate who is the famous Mad Magazine cartoonist Sergio Arrigantes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so like there's a reason why George Lucas hates the first few years of Star Wars comics is because he's like, "I made this wonderful, amazing thing, and these other yoo-hoos have like, you know, effectively ruined it in two issues." And that's like the Magicians, right?
Yeah. yeah. But, Katie finds Lovelady.
Right.
And it turns out that it's Pete, the guy who sexually assaulted Julia in the first episode of The Magicians. Woo!
Okay, and?
But he is Lovelady. He is the one who can get her, the bag of holding and can find the weeping baby doll.
You know how you can get a bag of holding, right?
You go to a D&D convention and you steal a prop from someone.
You don't need to steal it. You just buy it. It's probably like $40.
But
I bet you can find them on Etsy.
Yeah, probably. But she's like, "Hey, you know, I have to collect rent for the Baba Yaga." And he's like, "Oh my god, the Baba Yaga? You have to introduce me." And so he agrees to help her. And he says, "Okay, we need to go to the black market in order to get your bag of holding."
So wait, weren't they just at the black market?
No, they were just
at a bar. Is that a different market?
A hedge bar.
No, what was the... Oh, I'm so confused.
It's okay.
I feel like they've been to like two markets already this episode.
They haven't. But then we see Zelda and Everett again. Alice's book has been rewritten, and it says that she settles down in California. She, like, settles
Portland.
Down in Portland. That's what it was. Sorry.
That's Oregon.
I know. She settles down. I couldn't remember. I thought it was Berkeley.
And she has a dog.
Shih Tzu. Yes. And then Everett's like, "Oh, that's interesting. I thought she was a cat person."
I thought so, too.
And so Zelda tracks her down with the help of Gavin, the traveler, and she tries to find Alice, and she isn't where she's supposed to be in the book. But when she comes out of the brewery where Alice is supposed to work, she lies to Gavin and says that Alice is definitely in there.
Alice doesn't live there anymore.
Uh-huh. But then we see Katie and Pete at the black market. Katie goes up to this girl, Whitley, who she tries to get a bag of holding from her with some charisma cuffs, and that's not enough money. So Katie goes around the black market trading for something of that's equivalent
the old,
value.
That's the old, I have a pen, and I'm going to turn it into a house trick, right?
Yep.
Where you give somebody a ballpoint pen, and they keep trading it until you can get a house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that was cute. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it was a nice scene.
They did that kind of, although
pretty fast. No, I liked that it was so fast.
I did like that it was fast, but the thing is, the things that Katie was like trading for didn't seem like better value than the previous things she was trading.
Well, she had Aleister Crowley's.
Like one of them was like a jar of eyeballs.
Hell yeah.
I could get a jar of eyeballs. Right? Like, uh-huh. That's not that hard to get.
Uh-huh.
You know? It, like, okay, the last thing was, like, you know, the ashes of Aleister Crowley. Okay, that's, I guess that's rare, you know? And it was a nice-looking urn.
Uh-huh.
But, like, the things in between, like, it would have been nicer to see, like it getting more and more expensive-looking and exotic.
Bigger
or more exotic. Like, they were kind of, you know, they were weird. Things were weird. But they weren't, like, it wasn't like, you know, starting with cufflinks and then, like, ending up with, like, the Mask of Tutankhamun or something like that, right?
A tiger.
Sure, a tiger. Yeah. A green tiger like Cringer from He-Man.
A green tiger like Beast Boy.
Yes, exactly.
She gets the bag of holding and she comes back to find
Pete.
She has to get the doll, and Pete has found his friend Gordy, who is a magical veterinarian, and he knows someone who has the Webster's doll. And so they go to find his friend, and his friend is dead.
Yes.
And
living with Cousin It, the thing from the Addams Family.
From the Addams Family.
Why is the thing from Addams Family in The Magicians?
He's in between jobs.
I guess. I mean, it's a hand. It's a disembodied hand.
Yeah.
But why? That's like... All right.
If you were a magician, wouldn't you want one of those?
Yes, but here's the thing. All right, here's the thing. You illustrated the monster manual of the magician.
Yes.
In all the monsters that were in the books, was there anything like a disembodied hand?
I don't remember, but probably maybe.
No, the answer is no, right? The stuff that's in like the magicians is like talking animals and dragons and, you know, werewolves
normal
and vampires,
looking
right?
Vampires.
Normal stuff, right? Like there's no disembodied animated hand running
around.
Well,
that's because they usually don't have the budget for it.
But then why spend money on something that just doesn't make sense for the world?
Just for a funny little joke, a funny little reference.
Why couldn't it have been another animated doll? That would have been funnier. Like if the
or like a dog, because
this is the guy that
owes the parakeet or whatever.
No, hang on. This is what I'm getting at, is that they should have gone into a room with a bunch of dolls in it, and like which one's the weeping doll? Like this guy. So first of all, the guy collects dolls, and then like when they go to grab the weeping doll, all the other dolls come alive and come after him, right? Wouldn't that be creepy?
I know,
creepier
yeah.
than a little stupid hand, right?
Makes me think of Ebe.
What's Ebe?
It's a RPG game, JRPG. It's one of my favorites.
With dolls in it?
It's got dolls in it, yeah.
Animated dolls?
It's got spooky dolls that chase you.
That reminds me of Zombies Ate My Neighbor, which has spooky dolls in
it. Did zombies eat your neighbor?
No, where is our neighbor?
Our neighbor is always gone.
Yes. So maybe zombies did eat our neighbor.
But
the doll's not that creepy
either.
I was hoping for like an Annabelle or something.
The guy has a
weeping doll, right?
Mysterious illness.
Shouldn't it have like weeping, like black streaks or something creepy?
The tears were normal tears.
Maybe could it
should have been blood
cried
or something.
Milk or something.
Milk? Yeah, but they already did that.
Oh, that's true.
Remember with Reynard?
Maybe it should cry grape soda.
Ew. It'd
be all sticky.
It cries squirt, but sadly only Harry Potter likes squirt.
What are you talking about, Harry
it's
Potter?
It's an AVPM squirt. Reference.
No, you know what Harry Potter likes.
What?
Pumpkin
Red
juice.
Vines. Red vines.
Pumpkin juice.
Red vines.
Yeah, I know.
What the hell can't they do? But the guy who's dead has mysterious bruises all over his arm.
Did he? Now, wait, what did he die from?
Pete loots his dead body and takes his Dewey. And that's what it is. It's a cursed Dewey, Dad.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes, Dad. That's what it is. All right.
But why is it making his arms break out in blisters?
Because that's where he had enchantments, and it, like, marks you up, and it interferes with hedge enchantments, because hedges don't have formal education to properly do proper protection spells on themselves. That's why.
Sounds awfully contrived.
Uh-huh. but then we see Fen and Josh. Fen spooks Josh because she's hiding in his pantry.
Yeah.
Because she predicted that his souffle was going to fall flat. And he was nervous about Margot's dinner with the...
Llama Queen.
The Llama Queen, alpaca woman. And Josh says, hey, you know, if you're having these, you know, these dream predictions, why don't you try lucid dreaming in order to control it and see what's going on?
I can lucid
dream. You gotta do is touch your hand and then, you know, imagine everything freezing.
No, that's not what
that's
you do.
That's not what you do. What do you do to lucid dream? So, tell me, as someone who can't lucid dream.
I will tell you what you do for lucid dreaming. Is when you're in a lucid dream, when you're in a dream and things are not going the way that you want it to do, you go, this is stupid, this is just a dream, I'm gonna change it. And then essentially what happens is you get kind of this flicker effect. Like, it's almost like changing a channel. And then now you're in a new scenario and you're in a new dream. And then you go from there.
Interesting.
That's
interesting.
What I do. That's how I lucid dream.
But I always thought that
I don't actually
dreaming is like you are aware of what's happening.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you're aware. Like, I'm aware. And I go...
Like, you're awake in the dream.
I mean, mostly I dream realistic scenarios. Uh-huh. Like, I have not... very often had like fantastical dreams, and I barely have ever flown.
It's very interesting. And I don't, considering you have a lot of creative brain juice
comes all
going
out,
around
it
in
comes
your head.
All out during the day. Uh-huh. And then at night it's just boring
stuff.
It's
just boring. It's just like taxes.
Well, not taxes, but it's like I've had
going to the dentist.
Work anxiety. No, I've never had a dentist dream.
I had a dentist
I did have
dream
a dream
once.
Though where all my teeth fell out. Yeah, it was disturbing. Ew. But no, mostly it's like work or home, or I'm in social situations that I feel are awkward.
So, like, you're in class with your pants
I mean,
down,
I've had,
and
yeah,
you
I
have
mean,
to take a test, but you also have
yeah,
to,
I've
like, prepare class notes for your lecture.
Right. But then I kind of go, I realize I'm dreaming, and I'm like, I don't have to do this. Or even better, I had one dream where I dreamt I was in grade school, or in, like, junior high school.
And you're like, I'm an adult.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second, I'm grown up, I'm an adult, I don't go to grade school anymore. And I kind of, like, forced...
I don't have to do long division,
and
I have an iPhone.
And I changed, the dream. Is that the sign of being an adult, is to have an iPhone?
Yeah, because everyone, when you're a child, they're always like, you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket all the time, and then you grow up
and
like,
have
I have a calculator in
all
my
the
pocket.
Time. That's
all
true.
All the time.
So everybody's a big nerd, is
really
what you're saying.
Everyone's a big nerd, yes.
You're like, oh, you're such a nerd.
We can all write boobs upside down on our phone.
So if anybody ever gives you sass, you can go, you're a big nerd. And they'll be like, what? And you're like, you carry a calculator around with you wherever you go.
Yes. That's
and then they'll be
the
like,
sickest,
no!
That's the sickest burn, I've ever heard in my life.
It will work. Trust me. It will work every time.
But then we see Zelda. She comes to Dean Fogg and she says, hey, can you please help me find Alice? I want to know where she is. And like,
Alice
bring,
doesn't
bring
live
her
here
in.
Anymore.
Yeah. And Dean Fogg's like, listen, I have been complicit in every one of your fucking terrible bullshit
schemes.
Atrocities and like red tape and paperwork. And I say, no, thank you. You don't get to know shit, bro.
Yep. So Dean Fogg
and he
bails.
Says, it's your mess. Don't drag me into it. And then we see Zelda, she's back in her little office, or no, she's like at break bills still, and she's in the lab, and she, well, no, actually, I think she is in her office, I don't care, it doesn't matter, she
they
sees,
all look the same.
They all look the same, Harriet's in the mirror, and she signs, help me, and, Zelda comes to the mirror, and the mirror breaks against her, and all the glass goes flying. And then we see Pete and Katie.
I felt bad for that stunt woman, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Can you imagine getting, like, a whole window shattered in your face?
Ooh.
That'd be horrible.
You know what's worse? Is the guy, the stuntman who played Gibby in iCarly, Because he
was Gibby and iCarly.
Yes, because but also there's this meme that's called Gibby Dies, and it's this scene of Gibby like falling from the ceiling, and he lands like it's a loud fucking crunch against the floor, and he like just lays limp. You see the cast members in the background? It's genuine reactions. I haven't seen the meme.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's genuine reactions. And hold on. We'll pause and come back. I'll have to show. I'm going to show it to you right now. But basically.
Hold on.
But basically, the stuntman actually broke ribs doing that scene because it was like an cushioned fall. No padding whatsoever. He just fell and it was awful. We'll be right back. We're back.
We're back. Oh, dear.
Dad,
poor Gibby.
Dad laughed so hard he couldn't see.
Yeah, but that's because you showed me the wrong one first. You showed me Gibby landing and exploding. but it's pretty
That's
harsh.
Our ad. Watch Quentin Reviews iCarly's videos. I watched both of them, the 5-hour one and the 3-hour one that's only available in Canada now, and it's very good. That's our ad.
Let's finish this episode up.
but we see Pete and Katie, and Pete has a fucked up arm because he got the Dewey, and his friend Gordy, the vet man, he's the one who assesses that it's the Dewey that's cursed because he smells it, and it smells like cobalt, and that's common in tracking spells.
Okay.
And so apparently all the hedges are getting tracked with the Deweys, and the Deweys are reacting badly to their handmade spells, and because of that, they are, you know, dying. And so Katie has to strip all of the personal protection spells that Pete has from himself in order to prevent him from death.
They do that a lot in this show.
Yeah, and...
stripping.
That is true. And so we see that the library is, in fact, responsible for Hedges dying.
Yep.
So then we see...
Shortest bad thing happening to plot reveal in the Magician's history. It's like... two scenes ago, everybody's arms are bursting into flames. And then, like, we did it.
We did it.
We're the ones. Yay. We did evil coins that we handed out. Like, would somebody go around and go, like, hi there, you're Hedge Witch. Here's my evil coin. Why is it black and, like, has a skull on it? Don't worry about it.
Why are my veins turning black when I hold it?
Yeah, why is this burn when I hold it?
So
don't worry. Don't worry about it.
Feel my hand
anymore. Just put it in your pocket. You'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. It's
didn't any of the other hedge witches go, what the fuck? Some dude came up to me and gave me this evil black coin. Did you see the coin?
Normal,
it looks like a black coin.
They're normal looking Deweys. They look like poker chips.
Yeah,
basically.
Right. But they look like black evil poker chips.
Yeah.
And it's like, wouldn't the other hedge witches go, did you get a Dewey from somebody? And somebody else says...
Well, the thing is that they just kind of, like, circulated it in.
Do they not Facebook themselves? Like, do they not talk to each other online or something?
They circulated it into the
How long did it take for this to happen? Like, when...
Not that long.
When did this plan start?
Zelda proposed it, you know, pretty...
beginning of
the
episode, right?
Yeah, beginning of the episode before the
timeline's all screwed up.
Before the Modesto stuff. And so that's what happens. And it happens before the Modesto stuff.
And then they activate it for evil.
But after Alice's
So it's like Order 66.
It takes, like, basically, like, a week or two.
So it's Order 66. It's like, kill all the hedge witches.
Yeah, but not really. They didn't intend to
kill
them. They
should have just burst into
flames.
They
were just trying to track them so they could find Alice.
Why do they...
Remember? Zelda talks to Gavin.
It's a lot of effort just for Alice.
Yeah, well, it's Alice. We gotta love Alice.
No, she's just important now because she's a cast member. Like, she's not important, really.
And it's Olivia Taylor Dudley.
Yeah, okay. Hotness aside, she is, like, so moderately inconsequential to the plot at this point.
Yeah, well, it's going to keep being that way. But Zelda talks to Gavin and she says, you have to listen to me. Harriet is still alive. You know, she's stuck in the in-between the mirror realm and
the
living
world.
Phantom
zone.
Yeah, basically. And she's like, you have to help me. And Gavin's like, why would I, you know, use all my blood to help you? It's a free country, lady. Use your own blood. I want my blood. and she says, hey, listen, Harriet's my daughter and I can't live with myself if I can't help her. And also, it's kind of your fault because you're the one who broke the mirror. So you have to help me.
Right.
And so Gavin's like, well, shit, I guess I will help you. And then we see Josh and Margot. They And we see Rafe and Fenn. They're all gathered atop of the birthright lizard, and they're going to pour the beach juice on it in order to make it talk, which has restored every other talking animal.
That's good.
And when they pour the beet juice on it, the lizard catches on fire.
We should have seen at least Abigail get restored.
Yeah.
Right? Just get some closure on her story.
Of course. I mean, what do you think they do after they can talk to each other again? Do you think they have like a passionate...
Oh, yeah. I missed you so much.
I missed you so much.
I missed hearing
and then
your
like,
voice.
You know?
Yes, yes.
Like loving little screeches, and she like caresses his face.
With those massive claws.
With those massive claws. He gives her a grape, and she's like, thank you, babe.
The lizard explodes.
Fenn realizes that she's in fact in a dream, and she freezes it. And when she freezes it, she notices something out of the ordinary. There is a mysterious figure in a green cloak who
spying
runs away.
On her.
Yeah, who's been spying on her, and it runs, and they run away.
And it turns out
Fenn
it's Morpheus
them.
From the Sandman comic.
Well, no, Fenn trips and then wakes up in another dream, and she's in like a glen near a forest, and the mysterious robed figure is running across a bridge. And then she wakes up for real, and they're in the same scenario. Margot is about to pour the beet juice on top of the lizard, and Fenn runs in and says, "No, don't do it. It won't work." On the birthright lizard, it may work for everything else, but it's not going to work on this. I saw it in my dream. And then we get, you know, a little bit of, like, arguing between Josh and Margot, because this is after they had their whole argument. And, you know, Josh is saying, you got to listen to Fenn. Do you want to risk the life of your lizard, or is that a relationship you want to set fire to as well? Ooh, sick burn, Josh. A sick burn, indeed. But, basically, Fenn says that she had a dream, and she saw the hooded figure in Corian's land, which is, it's by the Fuchsia Forest, it's a bridge by the Fuchsia Forest. No, Corian's land is in the books.
I don't care at
but,
this point.
But, no, it's so funny, though, because Rafe goes, Corian's land, or as it's known, Sloth's Bane. It's just cute. But she declares that she is going to go on a quest to figure out her dream vision, and she's just going to go and do that. So then we see Katie with the hedges, and Pete is fine. She saved him, and she makes this really impassioned speech saying, you know, that these enchantments, they're going to kill you. The library is out for you, and they're not really on our side, and we're not going to let them tell us that we're not important or that we're just some side characters.
We're not going to take it.
Exactly.
No, we're not going to take it.
You can sing the rest?
No, that they're not going to take it.
Oh. but she says, you know, this is our story. We need to take control of the narrative. And so after that impassioned speech, Whitley, or Whitney, I guess her name probably is. Not Whitley. Weedy.
Keep going.
Wesley.
Okay.
she comes up and she says, hey, I want to blow up the library because there's a leaky leaky pipe in Modesto. And Katie says, no, don't do that. You know, I understand what you're going through, but you shouldn't do this, like, out this
right,
huge
don't
big
act
thing.
Out.
And, you know, Whitney, she's like, Did the library kill your boyfriend? And Katie's like, actually, yeah. So, like, shut up.
Library kills everybody's boyfriend.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? That's what they do.
Yeah.
They check out books. They kill your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, well, actually, that is literally true for Quentin, too. Oh.
Keep going.
Oh.
Keep going.
But then we see Gavin and Zelda, and they're in the in-between world, and the aspect ratio changes, and it's sexy.
Yeah, but nobody noticed.
I noticed.
You noticed. I did not
notice. It went from full screen to slightly not full screen.
Oh, my God.
But Gavin is, you know, pumping his blood in the mirror in order to keep it going. And Zelda goes into the in-between realm. And while she goes in, we see a person run by Gavin. And we don't know who it is. And so she goes into the mirror library and everything's like slightly off. You know, pictures are facing backwards and stuff. And she sees Harriet. And, you know, she signs to her and she's like, oh my God, I came here to help you. I love you. Are you okay? I miss you so much. You know, come with me. I'll take you home. And Harriet just mirrors her and starts to fade. And it turns out that she's just like a mirror version.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zelda turns around and she sees all these like funhouse mirror versions of Harriet that are spooky and scary. They're shards.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're called.
Okay.
And they go and try and attack Zelda. And she comes back to Gavin, who's been stabbed by
See,
one
now,
of the spooky Harriets.
There were like three spooky
there.
Harriets we saw, right?
Two.
Two,
and then the one that faded, but that wasn't necessarily spooky. She was just, like, mirroring.
I was going to say, where's our spooky spinoff Harriet show?
Oh, yeah.
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 Like the one with the mouth that, like, opens, like, widely.
Yeah, and the spooky eyes.
Yes.
Oh, the one without eyes.
Yes.
But then Zelda comes out of the mirror, and uh-oh, turns out Modesto, the Modesto branch, has been bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, damn it, if I wasn't gone, I wouldn't have missed this, and we could have prevented this. And Everett's like, you know, don't blame yourself, but hey, you did come up with a good solution. We maybe have to kill some hedge witches in order to protect the flame of knowledge from being extinguished. And he says, hey, Zelda,
wait a second.
There's no one I trust more than you to do this job. Yes?
Oh, never mind.
What?
I was going to be like, I thought it was water, not a flame.
Oh, it's the flame of knowledge. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I get
Eternal flame.
Sure. All right, is that it?
No, there's more.
Oh,
so then we see Alice for the first time in the episode.
Right.
She goes to Dean Fogg and she says, hey, I need somewhere to just, like,
what happened
to
the whole point of us following Fen, Zelda, and Katie? Where did Alice all of a sudden? Another white woman.
Well, it's because she appears and she says, hey, I need to talk to you. I need a sanctuary, basically.
Yeah.
And she's like, I need to hide from the library.
Again.
And Dean Fogg opens the door more and there's Zelda. And she's like, hey, I just need to talk to you.
Right. And so Alice says...
Well, they don't say anything. Then we cut back to Penny and the white guy, and we've been cutting in between them. They've been doing commentary
this whole
time. But, you know, Penny's like, you can't just underestimate these people. You know, what Zelda is about to do is going to change the library forever. Same with Fen and Fillory and Katie and all of magic. And, you know, you can't just decide where to shove a book. It's not an easy thing. You know, you think we have the right to choose who's valued, but we don't, you know, it's every person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to say, you know, Penny says, you know, Zelda's going to change the library forever. Fen's going to change Fillory and Katie's going to change all magic. That doesn't really happen. It doesn't.
Well, these are alternate reality
stories. No, they're not alternate reality stories. These are things that are actually happening in the show continuum and in canon.
It's an imaginary story.
It's not an imaginary story.
They're all imaginary stories.
That is true. That is true. But I'm saying that in the canon of the show, those three things that they are setting up for those characters to do don't really actually happen.
I have.
And it's very frustrating.
I have two words for you.
What?
Candy Witch.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to get into it at one point, and I'm just going to commit violence.
Come on, they've already proven at least a couple of times that they don't follow through on their
It's just lazy writing.
No, they probably just forget.
Well, it's lazy writing because they're trying to emulate Lev's.
It's not lazy.
Well, trying to emulate Lev's, like, loose threads. But the thing is that with Lev's loose threads, it was just to build the world.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily to create intrigue and create a plot point and then just walk away from
it.
It
was watching.
Yeah.
Right.
To a certain point.
But it did. It worked.
Uh-huh. Anyway, turns out that the white guy is actually he's on Undercover Boss, and
his name is Matt.
His
name
is Matt.
He's a radar technician. No.
He's got an 8-pack.
He's got an 8-pack.
No, but
he's totally shredded.
He's totally shredded. But basically, he's come to see if Penny's ready to be promoted, which he is. And so he says, hey, you have been promoted to Secrets Taken to the Grave. And actually, you have to start right away.
You have your first assignment.
You have no training whatsoever. And you just have to go in.
And you don't even know what the
job
means.
You don't even know what the job means. And you just got to go and do it. It doesn't matter if you're going to be terrible at it. You just have to go and do it.
Right.
And so he goes
to the... So essentially, he's the host of the restaurant. He's essentially
just like my brother.
He goes to the door and welcomes people.
And he says,
people.
Welcome, welcome. I'm going to be your therapist for today, even though I have no training, no PhD, no nothing.
All it takes to be a good therapist is to listen.
Uh-huh. And also maybe to have like a degree in
you don't need a degree.
I'd say you need a degree
in
psychology.
Just watch a few YouTube videos
and
you're good.
But basically Penny
can print out your own degree.
Penny is sent off to his new job without a clue in the world how he's supposed to do it. And he comes up to the elevator, the underworld elevator, and it opens. And we see a shot of Penny looking forward at someone. We don't know who it is.
But it's someone he recognizes.
And he says, hey, it's been a while. Welcome to the underworld. And that's where the episode ends.
Yes.
And I'm mad.
Well, no, you shouldn't be mad.
I'm mad because I know what's going to happen.
But you shouldn't be mad.
I'm mad.
Because he's getting a friendly greeting. He should get it. He should have got a hug.
I'm going to commit violence.
There should have been a hug.
They do hug.
Eventually.
Eventually, but it's not a happy hug. It's okay. Not a happy looking hug.
No.
It's not. It's maybe not a good.
Because
it's
Arjun
not.
Has made
there's
a choice.
No. There's. I know.
He's made a choice.
And
he's
so
not
did,
happy
you know,
anymore.
I know. And you know, it's good acting, but it also makes me mad because it's
no,
good
it
makes acting.
Makes you sad.
Makes me sad
because
Penny has lost his flavor. And
maybe
his...
you should write a sternly worded letter.
No.
To Arjun Gupta and say, I disagree with your choices.
No, I love
you made
Arjun
as an
Gupta.
Actor.
No, I don't
you
disagree.
Should, you're only
I'm not,
good.
No,
maybe
I don't
Arjun's
disagree.
Power
I'm saying, I'm
came
saying...
from his vest and his acting prowess
no, no, no.
as long as
I'm
he
not,
wore that
no,
vest.
I don't disagree with his acting choices. I disagree with the writing choices. He's just acting with the writing
no,
is.
Isn't
and
that
I respect
what writers
that.
Do, the, or actors do? Don't they go in and pester the writers and say, I want my character to grow. I want my character. I'm tired of playing this role. I want to do something else. I'm tired of having my shirt constantly. My nipples are chafing. let me instead wear a shirt, and that way I can give my nipples a break.
Uh-huh.
Right? I think that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what he did. He said, please, dear God, let me wear a t-shirt.
Yes, exactly.
A button down. Please,
right.
Anything.
So, in retrospect, about this episode, how many nipples, I mean, how many
no,
God beans
no.
do you want to give it?
I'd give this episode
how many God, wait, how many God beans are
2.5
we? 2.5 out
of 5. How many God
beans are we? 5?
A 2.5 out of 5. 2.5. 2.5 God beans. Because
would,
I'm nice and I liked the
you,
Dutch
you are
angles.
Nice.
I liked the angles and I liked Penny. But not really. But I still love Arjun, and that's about it.
Okay.
The points are for the book references. There were two book references. Those are the 2 points.
Dungeons and Dragons and Doctor Who?
No. The actual Magician's book
Love
references.
And
Love Lady and Love the Lady. The scene from The Magician King.
Right.
And the 0.5 is for Penny, but he's not himself, so that's why it's a doc.
All right.
But that is my rating. This is one of my least favorite episodes of the
I
whole show.
Tell.
not my least favorite. We're getting to it. But this one is definitely low on the docket because it's just, you know, it's all these characters that we haven't spent enough time with Zelda, you know, to care about her, even though we had a really good episode and 6 short stories about magic with her in it. That's a fantastic episode. That is a great Zelda moment. But, you know, for Fen, this whole time, she's still bland. And it just makes it kind of uncompelling. And for Katie, you know, she's been shafted so long by the narrative that it's also like, well, why should I care about her if she's not part of the main plot?
Right.
You know, and it just sucks because, you know, you want to care about these characters, but then it's just it's like the ball is fumbled so much that it's just like, well, I guess I'll just sit through it and wait for the next one and see if that's better.
Right. All right, there you go, 2.5.
How would you rate it? How many God beans?
I will give it one God bean for Baba Yaga.
Uh-huh.
I will give it one God bean for Gibby.
that wasn't even in the episode.
And that's it. 2 God beans. That's all
it gets. So really one, because Gibby is from iCarly.
This was a boring episode.
Yeah.
It was slow. Everybody spoke way too quietly.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that just didn't make any sense. It was double dose of fetch quests, and we didn't get to see our favorite characters.
We did see Sergio.
Oh,
we did see Rafe,
well,
though.
We didn't see Todd, that's, though.
But we did see Sergio,
right,
who
true.
We love and adore.
We do love Sergio.
Very much fan of the podcast,
yes,
Sergio Osuna. Friend
see...
of the podcast, Sergio Osuna.
We didn't get to see Sloth.
We did not get to see Abigail, and that is a crime.
Yeah, how can we see Rafe and no Abigail?
Well, you better get used to not seeing her.
Oh, no. Did they run out of, like, did Abigail charge too much for the next season and
no,
they couldn't afford her?
She died.
What? In season 4?
In season 5. She's not there because she actually died.
Oh, poor Abigail. I mean, we knew this, but
we knew
still,
this. It's very sad.
I'm feeling the pain all over again.
I know.
Again.
It sucks.
All right. Well, all right. So much for that. What's going on in the world of the Magicians? Maybe something more interesting?
Yeah, actually. So the Magician's Big Bang is finally over.
Oh, my God.
And you can go.
Finally.
You can go and read a whole bunch of crazy, cool new fics.
Well, that's cool.
Including the fic that I illustrated with my friend, Vic.
If I wrote a fic, would you illustrate it?
Yeah, of course. You just made a face. Of course I would. You're my dad. But I illustrated a fic called Plum and Ted's Excellent Adventure by Elbow Baggins on Archive of Her Own, and I will be wrecking it right there and right now. It's very good. You should read it. But there are so many other amazing fics. I have only started reading, like, one out of the so many of them, but I know that there are some vampire AUs, which I am excited about. And
are they real vampires or Twilight
vampires? They're real vampires. Okay. Of course, of course. But there's some really cool stuff there. And not only is the Magician's Big Bang now over, but now the Magician's Happily Ever After event is starting again. So this is a similar thing. It's another, basically another Big Bang. This event is based on rom-com movies. So basically you take a movie
like
and you
read
a quality. Yes. One of my favorite ones was Isn't It Romantic?
Never heard of it.
Which was is a movie starring Rebel Wilson, which I saw in theaters with my mother. Shout out to Mom. It was very fun, and HMG fanfic made it amazing. But yes, it's a really fun event, and you can sign up right now be an artist or a writer.
Anything else?
No, but you know what? You can contact us at fillerandfather@gmail.com, at fillerandfather on Twitter, or at fillerandfather on TikTok. Hit us up in the Gmails.
Yeah, you can even write to us and complain about how you...
Complain about the Magicians. We will read it out loud.
No, no. I was going to say complain about the fact that we haven't been on for a while.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. We'll make it up to you.
We'll make it up to you.
By finishing this
episode.
Podcast.
This episode.
This episode, yes.
One episode at a time. Hey, where can people find you?
Online.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where online?
I don't know. It's like in the tube somewhere.
The tube?
The tubes.
The tubes.
The series of tubes. You know, Twitter and the other one, Instagram on @MightyBedBug. And you can find me in the movie Game Master on Amazon Prime. And you can find me in the movie... what is it called? It's the one that, who's the guy who did Supersize Me? He did a documentary film about Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con. I'm in that one.
Okay.
That was years ago.
Yeah.
You can see young father in, not pre Evelyn though. I think it was,
post Evelyn.
No, I think it was like 2008 or somewhere around there. So you were around, but you weren't at Comic-Con. Maybe it's even earlier. Maybe it was like 2003. Can be found.
You can find
under a rock.
Okay.
And on a in a box.
You can find
and in a socks.
You can
and on a train.
You can
and in a plane. And you can find Evelyn online at.
You can find me at @wow_then on Twitter and at @fishydwarves on Instagram and on Patreon, also under the name Evelyn Rogers, also my website, EvelynLeeRogers.com.
Draw really pretty, so you should pay them for pictures.
Maybe subscribe to my Patreon. I'm doing a lot of cool projects.
How
right
many
now.
Magicians drawings did you realize you had drawn the other
I have
day?
809 Magicians drawings on my Patreon that you could come and look at for free, and also
well,
200.
Not for free.
Well, not
for
free,
Patreon.
Like a dollar. But you can also look at my 200 my 292 Quelliot drawings that I've done.
A dollar is not even.
Well, you could do a dollar, you could do $5, you could do $15.
First of all, a dollar wouldn't even get you a coffee. Secondly, a $5 wouldn't get you a coffee. All right. So that's it. That's
We did
so
it.
Do it. Yay, we did it. All right. Well,
thank you for listening.
Yay, we love you.
And you'll hear us next time
on Fillory and Father.
Yay.